This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Let's stay in the couch.
Vicky, he will turn this place into a den of slack.
What the hell is your problem?
I have to work around here, and unfortunately, Troy, you are a master at the art of time suckage.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Miss Poster Girl, for the workers' party, but until I get that toehold in the burger industry, I got a little time to suck. I'd rather check into a shelter than deal with her.
It's either that or a credit check.
It's cool, Troy. You can stay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. We've got a pretty interesting week of content lined up, starting off with a throwback. You know what? Let's not spoil it as to why we're doing this throwback. We are throwing it back 28 years to Reality Bites 1994. And here's the rub, Ben Stiller's directorial debut.
So I'm completely new to this. I know the pop cultural space that Reality Bites occupies. I know the tropes. I know all of the memes and jokes and whatever that it spawned. But this is the first time I've actually watched it. So this was an interesting... It was an interesting watch because I feel like in a weird way, it's one of those things where so many things are so different. And yet the idea of that brink of adulthood still is exactly the same.
I think for me, the best part, like the best thing about rewatching this this time is just seeing how everyone has aged and aged so well and how well everyone is doing with their careers. So Ben Stiller, of course, directed most of Severance. Ethan Hawke, we just saw him fighting the Fist of Khonshu in Moon Knight. Steve Zahn was in White Lotus last year. And then like Winona Ryder is going to be in like Netflix's biggest thing coming out this week, right? Like Stranger Things Chapter 4. So you can't say that about a lot of older movies. Like when you watch old movies, you see a lot of familiar faces, but you see faces that you haven't seen in movies and TVs for a while. You're like, oh, this person retired. This person's like even gone, not around anymore. You know, this person's not working. But it's very rare to find a movie where everyone has aged gracefully. And everyone's in a point in their careers now, like today, where you can go like, oh, you know, they became like very, very big influential names in Hollywood. Like they are doing big things and they're okay. They're okay in their space.
Which I think is how you could describe this whole film, in that I think it has aged actually relatively gracefully. It has also attained the same sort of pop culture footprint and imprint that its stars have attained. So it's kind of a very interesting growth. It wasn't that well received when it came out at the time, actually. And I can see why. I can also see why it merits rewatches or home watches, maybe more so than a one-time cinema thing. Reality Bites is a loose collection of stories, but mostly focused on Lelena, played by the ineffable 90s superstar Winona Ryder, who finds herself in this very weird, nebulous relation-friendship thing with her frenemy housemate, Troy Dyer, played by Ethan Hawke. And then there are two other housemates, played by Janine Garofalo, or Vicky, and Steve Zahn, or Sammy. And it's really about how the four of them are trying to survive in the 90s. I think that's what it comes down to.
And I think the title, right, Reality Bites, sort of coming out of college, having these confusions and ideals about life and who they're going to turn out to be and, you know, the kinds of compromises that you might have to make, what it means to be an adult at this point in time. And even that generational gap between what their parents' lives are and what their parents' expectations might be. So there's really a lot there. And I think that's partly why it's aged so well, because those kinds of fears, those kinds of insecurities, I think no matter how much cultural, social, economic situations have changed, those feelings, I think, don't really change. You said ineffable, and I have to say that to add on to that idea of rewatching these stars at this particular point in time, watching Winona Ryder in this is such a reminder of why she was such a beloved superstar in that era. She's just luminous. Like, she's so good in this role, even in scenes where you should dislike her. She's so beautiful, but I don't mean just in like looks. She's just she's so amazing to watch.
She's so amazing to watch. But at the same time, Ben Stiller is just playing to his strengths.
Yeah.
I love Ben Stiller's Michael because he isn't a dweeb. He's made to dress like a dweeb and talk like a dweeb and act like a dweeb. But it's like they made the choice to make his character neutral. And you don't exactly know whether he's the antagonist or whether he's supposed to be the bad guy. And that's a complex choice, right? Because normally the movie tells you who to hate and the movie tells you like, no, you're supposed to like Ethan Hawke, you know, not supposed to like Ben Stiller. But in this movie, he's not a bad guy. He's just not as quote-unquote cool as Ethan Hawke's Troy.
And Can I just say, I feel like I aged so much because I related the most to poor Michael.
Exactly.
I'm just like, he's just living life, man. Stop it.
Not only do we relate the most, but is he perhaps the better choice? I mean, yes. You know, this is something...
That's the question.
Right?
Yeah.
This is something we can discuss because the thing is, and that's part of the choice in making Ben Stiller's Michael kind of complicated. And it was a thing that they set out to do, right? Because they were trying to find somebody who could play the third wheel or the third angle in this triangle. And it's hard when, on the other hand, you have Ethan Hawke just not caring and strumming his guitar. Just being Ethan Hawke in the 90s. And they had to kind of age him down. He was supposed to be an ad executive, 35, selling Japanese candy bars or something. And that person is going to be less relatable. But Ben Stiller, who's sweet and well-intentioned, but also kind of sucking at the corporate teat. Just it's a hard balance that he has to strike.
No, I agree. And I actually really think that the strength of the story lies in the fact that, as you said, Armin, you don't actually dislike any of them. I mean, you kind of on paper see things about many of these people that's kind of toxic and you're just like, why do people like them? But then watching them performed by these actors, you completely understand the charisma, the attachment, why Troy Dyer turned out to be the iconic character he is. And in many ways, I think inspired so many other of these types of roles that came after.
I mean, can you imagine if Facebook was around in the 90s? Like Troy Dyer would have been like everyone's profile picture,
right? Everyone's profile picture and about me
with a weird quote that he says in them. Oh my god. But I love movies that capture age so well, and I love movies that change when you watch them at different ages. So Ethan Hawke, like we said, is supposed to be, or Troy, is supposed to be like such a cool guy. Like he's supposed to be the template blueprint for every teenager and early 20s person, right? And when you watch him when you're younger, you sort of see why that edginess works. But then when you watch him now, and for me specifically, when I watched him now, I'm like, this guy is insufferable. Like he's a bum, right? He's talking nonsense. He doesn't make sense. He's just picking things. He reads out of books.
He's a bum who's a troll.
He doesn't even practice what he preaches. He's just saying things. And so I'm like watching it and going like, my God, this guy is so irritating. Like, and I can't understand why people would actually find him charming, but then you also understand why people would find him charming. And I love that. I love movies that do that so well because I love movies that are dynamic that way. They just change. Like you can watch them when you're a teenager, different movie. In your 20s, different movie. And then when you watch them now, it's a completely different movie.
Different and yet still iconic. And I think that that's the interesting thing. So Sharmila, you mentioned earlier that some of the themes are somewhat universal, right? This idea of feeling at a loose end, being high achievers, which they all are, high achievers trying to make things work, but also suddenly finding themselves adults and having to pay the bills for the first time on their own. And I think that's always going to be something people, like a rite of passage, right? That we're all going to have to go through at some point in time. And so for that reason, it's really relatable. On the other hand, the way that they look, the fact that they're smoking indoors, a cell phone call being made in a phone booth at one point is like a physical gag. And what kind of movie made today is going to have that gag? Phone booths don't even exist anymore. And so there is a specificity about the time that makes it very important for Generation X. I mean, this has widely been called a Gen X film. But at the same time, there's that relatability, which is why I think you can keep coming back to it in a way that you might not be able to do for other films.
And other things as well, right? Like a general cultural sense of, they constantly talk about their parents' marital difficulties or marriages, divorces, and so on, which again was a particularly late 80s, early 90s kind of thing. By now, I think we're seeing more movies where teenagers are you know, coming from families of separated, divorced parents, remarried parents, is a lot more normalized. Whereas in this film, it's actually examined and treated as a way of, you know, what does that do to a kid to grow up around, you know, parents that were fighting or having bad marriages? So culturally, as well, there's a lot there that's very specific to that era. There are things about capitalism. There are things about ideals also that mark it as being quite unusual. But you're right that I think that there is a kind of pleasure in maybe for people our age in particular looking back, because we were kids when movies like this came out. And so we still have memories of a particular tone that we don't get in film anymore. And I think I enjoyed that part quite a bit.
Reality Bites is also one of the purest examples of why it's so difficult to capture the 90s when they're remaking movies that were based in the 90s, right? So we've seen movies made in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Very few movies that come from the 90s, even though it was like 3 decades ago, and it's an interesting thing to think about, right? I think Reality Bites shows that it's not about the music or the language or the dressing or the clothes. It's a vibe. It's a vibe that's very hard to replicate. And I think it's all of those things combined that give the movie that sort of like that. It has everything, the warm film grain. It has the background music. It has the grunginess. But it also has such an organic 90s thing because it was made in 94. That's very difficult to emulate, I think. And this is one of the movies that really, really like hammers that message home.
We're talking today about Reality Bites from 1994, about 1994. We'd like to hear from you. Have you watched it, rewatched it? Do you also think that Troy Dyer is maybe not the hero he's made out to be? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
There's no point to any of this. It's all just a random lottery of meaningless tragedy and a series of near escapes. So I take pleasure in the details. Quarter pounder with cheese. Those are good. The sky is out. 10 minutes before it starts to rain. A moment where your laughter becomes a cackle. And I sit back and I smoke my Camel Straight. And I ride my own melt.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmilan, Arvin. And together we are throwing it back to 1994 and Reality Bites, because tomorrow we'll be talking about Ben Stiller's latest turn in the director's chair in Severance. But this was actually his first. And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about Troy, because of course it's all about Troy. You know, that's how he would want it, I imagine. But what is it about him that has led to him still being quoted? Because that's a thing, you know, about this film. The person who gets quoted the most is actually Troy. The person who lives on Twitter, the person who lives in memes and GIFs is actually still Troy. It's not the others. And I don't know exactly what it is. I think that there is something about him being the quintessential slacker, played by Ethan Hawke, who is also still a charismatic love interest. There's something about all those things triangulating that creates this character that people still fixate on for some reason.
Slacker, but not slacker because he's incapable, right? He's the rebellious slacker who's like turning his back on what's expected of him.
Is he?
Exactly.
Again, we are starting to sound like our own parents talking about our films, but no, I get why to a particular generation of people this would have been very attractive. I mean, that of course combined with the fact that he's the boy that every girl is told isn't good for you, right? And that's the other thing that these movies did so well, kind of make a case for these men who were in many ways actually quite toxic and probably wouldn't have been a great relationship after the ending of the film. But, you know, in the film, the triumph of the relationship is celebrated. So I think there are lots of things there. I don't know. I like Troy a lot in this film. So I can see the appeal. I also hope that he grows up and ends up treating Lainey the way she deserves to be treated. But I'm not holding out a lot of hope.
I don't know. I think it's the... I think it's the ability to sound smart but not commit to anything. Like, honestly, like, he doesn't commit to anything that he says. He has, like, philosophies, and he picks things out of, like, random books or things that he has read, right? But then you find that the thing that he said a scene before isn't the way he's behaving in the scene after. So he's obsessed about Winona's character, Lilaini, right? So
Lilaina.
And he believes in things like love, and he's infatuated, all that stuff. But then right before that, he's like, oh, all these things don't matter, and life is cynical, and nothing means anything. All you need is cigarettes and coffee, or whatever he's blabbering about, which is a nice fantasy. I can understand why the slacker thing is a nice fantasy, but I don't know, like, just, he's a bumler again.
I come back to, despite the bumminess, this is really just my gateway to talking about the charisma of the various stars, because we mentioned Winona Ryder briefly earlier, but I think that Ethan Hawke is also just the prime example of this, because I was eye-rolling all the way through, and then in the final 5 minutes, which, because I'd seen the film before, I knew it was coming, I was like, I wonder if this is going to play differently for me now that I'm older, and I just think he's, you know, so problematic, so toxic, taught a generation of people probably that this is how it's okay to behave. And then he gives that little speech on the stoop, you know, with the soft sunlight and the Ethan Hawke face and the vulnerability. And I thought, yeah, yes, Lilaina, make that choice. And I was thinking that that's just a function, honestly, of the fact that we are seeing... we're seeing people really inhabit their characters and also be very charismatic in their own right. I actually think that all four of the main characters kind of have that inhabiting, that thing where you want to watch them, you want to root for them. And that's partly why they're still acting today.
And they have great chemistry as a group, which I really love. I mean, you can kind of understand the kind of friends they are, the relationships they have with each other, why they fight like cats and dogs, and then in the next moment they're sitting down eating at a diner and laughing together, and I think there's something really sweet about it. I think the other thing about Ethan Hawke's character, Troy, is that he strikes just the perfect balance between a fantasy character or someone that you read about in a book or watch in movies repeatedly, and someone that you probably know in real life and has those shades of vulnerability and reality and sort of hypocrisy even. And there's something about that that I think, again, why that final scene works, because, yeah, even for me, right, like, even with the first time watch, I'm spending most of the movie going, oh my God, girl, get away from this guy. And then at the end, I'm just like, oh, it's happened.
Do you guys also notice that Troy never helps any of his friends? Like, his friends are going through background problems, right? And the movie does this very clever thing of making their bigger problems background problems. So, Vicky, so there's a HIV/AIDS commentary that's going on in the background, just beneath the surface. And she's waiting for HIV test results. And then there is Sammy, who's a closeted man in the 90s. So he's struggling with his own issues. And these are bigger issues than whatever the main core characters are going through, right? But Ethan Hawke's Troy, for everything that he says, never helps them. Like, he never chips in. He never gives them advice. He's never there to, like, sit around and go, like, oh, things will be okay.
Just bring strange girls home.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
And then forgets their names in front of them and is mean to them.
In front of everyone.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
well, okay, so here's the thing, right? And this is where we need to talk about Ben Stiller, not as the performer, but as the director and the person who kind of helped to shape the whole thing, because he was someone that they actively wanted to do the film based off of his work on the Ben Stiller Show. So it was that made them think, okay, this guy can direct this film. And then they had so much trouble getting it off the ground, but he actively said that he wanted to focus on the Troy Lilaina situation and felt that he wouldn't be able to flesh out the other stories. And I have to say that I don't know if that's true. You know, looking back now, admittedly, as someone who was not a first-time director, I kind of wish that there had been more expansion of their stories. I understand why, if it's your first film, there would be a desire to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to narrow it down and really kind of put my best foot forward with these two, or rather these three, including myself. But I think I wish we'd gotten more of Vicky, because Janine Garofalo is so fun. And Steve Zahn played his character so snappily, but also with a vulnerability that I enjoyed watching.
So mellow.
Yeah, exactly.
I really felt that their characters were shortchanged, and I would have liked to see more of them. The movie's not very long, to be fair. I mean, by today's standards, it's practically an episode of a TV show. And, you know, there could have been more time given to, as you said, Arvind, you know, the two of them are actually going through bigger issues than Troy and Delena. But I mean, I guess I can see why Ben Stiller chose to focus on the central pairing or the central trio, as it were. I just wanted to say, like, does anyone think the documentary that Lainey was shooting would have worked? Because, I mean, that's the central conceit, right? She's making this documentary of her friends' lives and her life, and Michael kind of puts it through a lens that she's not very happy about. Again, I don't know whether this is just me being super adult, but I'm just like, who is going to watch that documentary, Lainey? Who?
I mean, there's TikTok. That's the first thing that I thought about. I'm like, you know, if TikTok exists and we're just watching random people do random things and talk about their lives and we don't know if any of it is true. So I was like, so that was the same question I had. I was like, who's going to watch this weirdly shot camcorder documentary, right? And then I thought about like social media and TikTok and I'm like, oh, okay, so we're not so different.
And that's what Michael did, actually.
Exactly. He MTV-fied
it. He's the TikTok version of the documentary.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think of Lalena as a high performer. I think, you know, you actually see it set out like right at the beginning because the movie is framed within the documentary, or rather the documentary intersperses the rest of the film. But one part of it is her giving the valedictorian speech in which she says, I don't know. And that's how the whole film starts. And I'm like, okay, you know, all right then. Which is why I don't think we should expect a strong narrative and fully fleshed out ending from Lalena Pierce.
Are you guys excited about or, you know, looking forward to the TV show that they're working on for TikTok? TikTok for Peacock?
I am not, mostly because I don't necessarily want to see a replication of a slice of the 90s with 90s actors played by people now. I don't know. It's like even watching Leonardo DiCaprio go back to his 90s haircut, if he ever does, would be weird to me. Like,
off-putting.
I don't want that.
I also think that we can't help but tell that story through today's lens, and I don't think I really want that.
So I don't think this concept is tied so much to the 90s. They said the producers are coming back. Oh, Danny DeVito is one of the producers of this movie, also doing very well in his career. But I think like with good writing and a good cast, it could work. Not going to have any pop culture footprint, not like the movie, but I think it could work. I don't know. Optimistic.
We've been talking today about Reality Bites from 1994. Let us know if you've watched it back then, if you've rewatched it, if you're watching it for the first time recently. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.